Golf Interview with Anne Liguori is brought to you by Tourism Ireland. Ireland is open and ready to welcome you back. World-class courses, celebrated links, spectacular scenery, rich culture, and the warmest of welcomes await. Now is the time to get back to the things that matter most. Now is the time for Ireland. Press the green button and start planning at ireland.com/golf. And by iBeCool athleisure wear for men and women. Technology meets fashion with iBeCool. Stylish UPF 50 plus sun protection and ice field technology to cool your body temperature on hot and humid days. Look great and protect your skin. iBeCool.com. Welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori, and it is my pleasure to say hello to Clive Clark, renowned golf course architect, a player, broadcaster, a true Renaissance man, Clive. We're here at the Hideaway, one of 33 golf courses that you designed. Thanks so much for being on Sports Interview.
Well, great pleasure to be with you, Anne, and we've got a lovely day here. It's about 72 degrees, the sun is shining, there's no wind. We should have our golf clubs out there playing.
I know, we really should be playing. It's just a perfect day here in, where are we? We are in La Quinta, California, in the desert. Before we get to your baby Dumbarney Links, Clive, which just opened, a year ago, and it's gotten rave reviews, or maybe 2 years ago by now, 2020, right? Let's talk a little bit about the Hideaway here and some of the other projects that you've been involved with.
Well, the Hideaway is 36 holes. I designed one of the courses. Pete Dye designed the other. And it's a thriving golf club, very, very pretty. The two courses are somewhat different in their strategy and layout. Pete's is a very good challenging golf course, and the decor around the side is largely different varieties of grass. Mine is more colorful in the sense that there are a lot of colored shrubs, annual flowers, waterfalls, babbling brooks. But, you know, there's some excellent courses, and in fact, there are about 280 or 90 properties on here. And this area is going wild. There is not one home for sale at the moment. They've all gone. Same at Tradition, just down the road, which is a gorgeous golf club. Arnold Palmer designed it. I think they've got one house left out of whatever there is there, about 280. That's a beautiful place too, right up against the mountains. And probably one of the very best courses that Arnie designed, who, you know, we all know Arnold Palmer. I mean, whether you're a golfer, you're not a golfer, he would be one of the most famous names in the whole world.
Right, I just love the Tradition, and, you know, it's such a special place. Well, all of La Quinta, just there are a lot of great golf courses just in, you know, this area of La Quinta, right? And then Rancho Mirage and the Palm Desert. There's so much great golf out here. How did you get into the design business? Because I know you were a player, then a broadcaster, and you and Peter Ellis connected.
Well, I had one small trick, I suppose, up my sleeve, was that the fact that I went to university to study to be an architect to do buildings. And I was playing very good amateur golf at that time, and I decided I preferred playing golf, as I'd been on the Walker Cup team and won several national amateur tournaments. So I decided I'd turn pro and not do the architecture. That came in handy later on when I started design, and I thought Peter Ellis had been involved in design before with Dave Thomas, but they were no longer working together, and I was sort of every other week in the commentary box with Peter, and I said, hey, what do you think of going back into design of golf courses? And he said, absolutely. So, you know, Peter was a terrific front man because he's known throughout the world for his commentary. In fact, he's, in my book, is probably the best commentator on golf that there's ever been. I mean, because he had the wit and the charm and the voice. And people absolutely loved him in Britain and, of course, America when he was working over here. So he was a lot of fun to work with, and we had this design business, and I could do all the drawings and grading plans and master plans because I'd had training in that area. So, you know, between us, we were a pretty good pair, and we got a lot of work.
You were broadcasting with him for 18 years with the BBC. What was it like, as you say, broadcasting with the voice of golf?
Well, he was certainly a very entertaining person. He was a wonderful after-dinner speaker. The speech he made, I think it was about 2012 when he was inducted into the Hall of Fame, was typical Peter, no notes, and off he goes for 15 minutes. But he was hilarious. I remember one time we went to Australia. We were invited by ABC Australia to go and commentate, the pair of us, on the Australian Open. So we get down to Australia, and they've gone metric. Now, in Peter's mind, golf was always a game in feet and inches and yards. It wasn't meters and centimeters. So anyway, we had a production meeting, and Peter said, well, I prefer to stay in yards. And the producer said, no, you can't do that because Australia has gone metric. So we start the first morning, and I'm interested in what Peter's going to say about this, you see. So he said, well, here's Peter Thompson on the second green, and he's hit a good 3-iron in there, some 12 paces from the hole.
He made up his own measuring system.
Yes, he wasn't going to be defeated on that one.
Well, yeah, I mean, because you really have to think metrics, yards. I mean, you have to do a little math in your head, right, if you're going to get it right.
Well, absolutely. But, you know, when you've been brought up in, say, the States or Britain, it's a game of yards and feet. But, you know, it's all convertible. But so is petrol in England. That went to litres. And I'm sure that went to litres because they put the price up, you see, the tax up. But nobody knows what they're getting when you say a litre. So how much a litre? They don't care. They can't convert.
You might be right about that. That was an interesting move. What else? Give me some other stories about working with Peter Ellis, because, as you say, he was just so renowned in broadcasting. And he was quite a golfer, too. He had played on 8 Ryder Cup teams.
He was a very good golfer. When I was an amateur in my late teens, and when I first turned pro, I played quite a lot of golf practice rounds with Peter, and he had what I call an imperial strike of a golf ball. He just very good, powerful swing, and he hit great long iron shots. He used to soar into the air and pretty much fizz through the air. He was less talented on the greens. The short putts really prevented him probably from winning open championships. He wasn't a good short putter, but he was a wonderful striker of the golf ball. And of course, he had a great sense of humor. And he always drove a Rolls Royce, which became quite famous, partially him looking back on his putting, I think. The registration number was putt 3.
Oh, no. Really? That was his license plate?
That was his license plate, yes, which are very difficult to get in England. You know, in, say, California here, you can order for about, I don't know, $50 or whatever it is. But in Britain, you can only buy existing plates. So they're very hard to actually get something of that sort of. We had a famous comedian, and he got COM1C, comic, but hard to come across.
Right. I have Talking Golf, which wasn't too hard to get in New York, but 3-putt or putt 3, I don't know if I'd want that.
Yes, it makes you think, actually, what you choose, doesn't it?
Subliminally, that has to enter in, you know, your consciousness when you're on the golf course. But
yes, I remember driving behind someone in Palm Desert, and it was a gentleman driving the car, and the registration was hers.
Was hers, I love that.
Obviously, being a divorce in the family.
That's very cute. I love that one. So any other Peter Ellis stories before we go to Dumbarney Lynx, your baby?
If you gave me a minute, I can probably rustle a few up, but move on and I'll come
back.
Well,
was it tough? I would imagine you guys were friends from your playing days, and to be his partner in the broadcast booth, he probably made it rather comfortable for you?
Yeah, well, he was actually, he effectively got me the job because when I started out, I was the head pro at Sunningdale Golf Club, and we had the ladies' Colgate tournament on with Judy Rankin and Donna Capone and all the top LPGA players. And Henry Longhurst was getting on the old side and not very well, so they'd started to look for somebody else to come in and work with Peter in the commentary box. So I arrived in my office down in the pro shop at about 8 in the morning, and there was a note, "Would you like to go for an audition with BBC? And I thought, I don't know, I'm so sure about doing commentary. I was sort of nervous about it. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't particularly like public speaking, but I could do it. And I thought, well, I'll go along just to see what they do. And I knew the golf course very well. I'd probably played it 5,000 times. And they were early starters, so it wasn't a question of knowing that player's won this or they hit it with a heavy draw, or it was just commenting on the shots. And I left there and had a half-hour audition, and I thought, well, that's one of those. Don't call us, we'll call you. And the next week, the producer called me and said, we loved your audition. You're going to come up next week to work on the Double Diamond Tournament, Glen Eagles, with Peter Ice and Henry Longhurst. And a sort of shudder went down my spine at the thought of it. But anyway, we got up to St. Andrews, and we start the program, and there's Henry Longhurst on one side of me and Peter Ellis on the other side, and I'm in there in the middle. And Peter did about the first 20 minutes, the way the matches worked, and I'm sort of sitting there getting more and more nervous. And the producer said, right, Clive, we're coming to you. You're on the fifth hole, and it's the match against Spain, and Ángel Gallardo is two up. So that's the first thing you've got to do. Where are we? What's the score? Who's playing? And I do that bit, and the producer says, oh, no, he's three down. And I think, well, I've only said two sentences, and I'm wrong already live on air. But then working with Longhurst was very interesting. He was a great character, and he wrote some wonderful books, which I'm sure are still available, but My Life and Soft Times was one of the great books that he wrote. He's a wonderful writer, and he's a wonderful broadcaster. And in fact, I had a hole-in-one when I played in the Masters at number 16, and in those days, that was Henry Longhurst's hole. And so all he had great economy of words, you see. He didn't sort of babble on all the time. He just covered it. But they're always sort of profound words. And Henry said, well, here's young Clive Clark on the 16th tee. He's playing a long iron, it's into the wind. And the pin was back right, which is a very difficult pin position. And I hit my 3-iron, and it was right on line, pitched on the front of the green, scampered up the green, onto the ledge, and went into the hole for a one. And there was all the bank of spectators on the left side, and they were throwing their hats in the air and hooping and hollering, and this seemed to go on for a long time, and eventually the applause died, and Longhurst said, and there you have it.
Sometimes the fewer words, the better, right? Let the action kind of take over. And, boy, a hole-in-one on the par 3 16th at Augusta National. How special is that?
Well, you know, you hit. I've had eight in my lifetime. And, you know, like you, like me, like everybody who plays golf, we hit some good shots at the par 3, but it doesn't mean to say they're going in the hole because, of course, at 4 1/4 inches wide, it's not exactly a huge target. But it does occasionally happen, and it's just great fun, isn't it? I'm sure you've had a few as well.
Well, interestingly that you said that, Clive, because all the years I've been playing golf, I had my first hole-in-one literally about a week and a half ago.
Congratulations. And where did you do that?
I did not hit a two iron. I live in Orlando in the summer, in the winter, and it was at Heathrow Country Club. It was only 85 yards, but I saw the whole shot, and it was purely hit. It struck the green about a foot and a half from the hole and spun in beautifully. So I was very happy with the way I hit the shot.
Well, that's talent for you. Look forward to the next few coming up.
That's right. Hopefully I'll get as many as you have had. Let's talk about Dumbarney Links, your newest project, right? And in a very short period of time, it's gotten a lot of accolades. Tell me all about it.
Well, it's been fortunate, being the creator of it, because I founded the project as well, so I'm very heavily involved. But I designed the golf course, and we've had great publicity. I mean, more than you could ask for. We've won 3 big awards for best project. This is worldwide. Best project, best golf course, and best service. And that's all been in the last few months, as well as having the Women's Scottish Open last August, which is an LPGA event. And we had Lydia Ko and a lot of the top players playing, which was great. In fact, Lydia shot a 63 in the last round. I mean, I find that quite incredible. Yeah. I feel probably I could get round with 63 putts, but not.
A 63, well, what a great showcase of the golf course as well.
Yeah, I think it's, I actually really enjoy it because, one, I've always enjoyed and largely been brought up on links, pure links golf courses, which are fascinating because they're the tradition of the game. The game started with links, and there are really very few in the world. There are only about 250 links golf courses in the entire world. Now, when you think there are something like 14 or 15,000 golf courses in America alone, they're a rare breed. And if you take that 250, they're not all top line links golf courses. There are probably about 40-ish top golf courses, many of them where they play the Open Championship. But what I like about Dunbarney, it has a lot of risk and reward, and you've actually got to think what you're doing. And the challenge is open equally to a 20 handicap player. They can have not only fun, but it's entertaining because you look and you think, should I go down that fairway? It's a shortcut, but it's narrower, and there's more penalty if I miss it, or should I play down the other fairway, which is twice as wide, but it might add 3 clubs to the second shot? And then there are the 3 drivable par fours on the right day with the right player, with the right length and the right wind. They're drivable, but they're not straightforward. It's not tee, fairway, green. You either play for the safe fairway out to the right or the left and hit a wedge or a 9-iron in, or you can go for the green, but you have to carry all the trouble and the rough and the gnarly pop bunkers, those nasty little revetted sod-faced things when you get in them. So again, it's risk and reward, and it makes you think, as well as the fact that the course, which is unusual for links, is on 2 levels. You have a coastal plain down by the sea, which in this case is the Firth of Forth, which is about a 10-mile stretch over towards Muirfield and Edinburgh. And then there's a higher plateau, which is about 60 feet of elevation, which is about 100 acres, because this is a very big site. It's 345 acres for pure links golf, no trees, all sand dunes, and we have some burns on there. So you get some wonderful vistas, particularly off the high ground, because I was able to point some of the holes straight into the Firth of Forth. So that's your backdrop from an elevated tee of about 60 feet. So you look across the golf course and out to sea and across to Muirfield. So the views are really quite spectacular.
And I understand, Clive, that Malcolm Campbell, Scottish golf writer, introduced you to the site. He looked at this site, according to the article that I read, and said, this is the only thing this land is made for is a golf course.
Well, he got something right, didn't he? No, Malcolm's a great friend of mine, known him 50 years, wonderful guy, in his mid-70s, still plays good golf. He's about a 10-11 handicap and often plays less. And he lives about 3 miles down the road in Lower Largo. And when he goes for walks, he will pass this site on the coastal footpath, and been in his mind for years. And I was always been looking to do a links, and he was over staying with me, and he said, you must go and look at this place, Dunbarney Links. It's owned by Lord Balneil. He said, I have met him a couple of times. So I said, well, off you go. Go and have a word with him, see if there's any interest. And Lord Balneil doesn't play golf, but eventually I went over there. We came to an arrangement. We now lease the land on a very long lease. And I was a little worried because we'd signed all the legal paperwork, and I went over there about a week after the machines, the big machines, there were like 24 huge earth-moving machines, and Lord Balneil is a great ecologist, and he loves the birds and the countryside, and I thought, oh my, when I get there and bump into him and there's cartonfuls of dirt flying at 2,000 feet on his site, he might not be too happy. And I bumped him the first day, and he said, Clive, this is absolutely wonderful. Look at these natural dunes you're creating. It'll bring all the birds back and the bumblebees, he said. I couldn't be happier.
Good. I can't wait to go over there and play it. Now it's, what, about 20 minutes from St. Andrews? I mean, to be so close to the birthplace of golf. I mean, Fife, as you're, you know, that area, it's just so rich in golf history. And then you have, you know, newer courses like King's Barnes and, you know, the legendary Carnoustie. It's in such a hotbed of golf.
Well, you're absolutely right. It is. And that's really the reason why I wanted to do it on this site, because everybody comes to St. Andrews. I mean, every golfer, it's a must to go and see St. Andrews and play some of the golf courses. And it was on the water, so from every hole you can see the Firth of Forth, which people love looking at, you know, expanse of water. In fact, I measured it up, and it's really a panoramic view, and I measured it up, and it's nearly 200 square miles of water that you look at. So you've got St. Andrews, which is the must-play place to go. We're close to that. We've got the water, and we've got a genuine links site. No trees, all sand. So it's perfect. So, okay, we had to make a few sand dunes. There weren't that many there, but there are a lot of them now.
Must be a dream come true for you. You've had such a storied career, and here is, did you say it's your only links course design?
Yes, they're very rare. If you look at the catalogue of courses that many famous designers have built, not very many would be links. When you start to think how many take Scotland alone, which has more links than any other country in the world, but how many new courses in the last, say, 20 or 30 years have been built there? Handful, maybe five.
So when you look at all of this, your incredible career as a player, a broadcaster, a golf course designer, how special is this project for you?
Nothing really special. I'm just in love with it. I can't wait to get there this summer. And I enjoy playing it so much because it makes you think. That's the challenge. What am I going to do? Am I going to take the shortcut here? Am I going to take the shortcut there? If I play over to this side, do I get a better sight of the pin? The greens are quite large. They have some undulation, but there's no buried elephants there. If you three-putt, it's probably your own fault. And then there are these wonderful large aprons, which you could pretty much, the condition of the course, we actually were very fortunate to get the head greenkeeper from the old golf course at St. Andrews. So he knows what he's doing. And he got it into condition for the, when it opened, it was in beautiful condition. Now, if you think about Scotland, and, you know, the weather's a little bit temperamental. It's not like living in the desert here where you throw grass down and it hits you under the chin. It doesn't necessarily do that in Scotland. So you've got about an 18-month growing. But when we opened, I mean, the golf course, the aprons, everything, fairways, were just about as perfect as you could get them. And the fun thing about these aprons, there's some little valleys on some of the holes just off the green, but it's all apron. It's rather like the Valley of Sin on the old course. So you now have the option. Should I hit a utility club and run it along? Should I putt it? Should I hit a sand iron? Should I hit a six iron and bump it into the bank? So you get all these opportunities to figure things out as you go around according to where you've hit it, which I think makes not only for a fun course, but it's very entertaining.
It forces you to think on every shot, obviously.
Yeah, very much so, because you've got the options of, as I say, pin placement, which fairway on about four or five of the holes, what do I do when I miss the green? It's not like America. I mean, it's glorious. You take these courses like Hideaway here, but you're not going to putt very often from 5 feet off the green. You have to probably play a sand iron or a gap wedge, or you might be able to play a utility club. But that, it's a different type of golf. And I mean, they're both so enjoyable. This golf course at Hideaway, it's got a lot of members. They enjoy playing it. But scenically, the desert, the mountains, the palm trees, the color of the shrubs, the annual flowers, and the gorgeous weather. I mean, it's a delight to be around.
Two totally different experiences, right? So wonderful for you. You can, you know, play here, obviously, in the winter at the Hideaway in La Quinta, and then you can go to Scotland and enjoy Dumbarney Links. I mean, those are, talk about two totally different golf experiences that you designed.
Well, yes, they are. And in many respects, because this is the first pure links golf course I've designed at number 33, they're actually harder to design. And I'll tell you why. Because compared to, say, a desert golf course, where you have the trees, the palm trees, the annual flowers, the colored shrubbery, the babbling brooks, the lakes, the waterfalls, none of that is in the equation on a links. You are making it by moving dirt. There are no trees on the links. You've got sand dunes, and you've got to either have a site that is full of dunes and you can find your way through and eliminate some and do it that way, or if you're on a flat site, but it's genuine links because it's sand and fescue, you have to make it. And that's what you have to make it with is dirt.
So which is more challenging, doing that?
Yes. Yeah, it's hard to do. I was fortunate because I was able to spend the summer right on site, and I was on the site 6 days a week working with the machines. And why is that good? Because, you know, a lot of courses are designed and the head designer pops in maybe once a month, but sometimes things have got ahead of you. They've already put this in, or the irrigation's already in now on the hole. You can't do anything. Whereas when you're there on a daily basis, you know, there's a lot to do when you're shaping dirt, because you're controlling after the big dirt is moved, which you is worked off a grading plan, so that's a kind of automatic process. But once you have your three shapers on board, you're virtually modeling it as you go. The dirt is in roughly the right place, but for instance, you don't want three dunes in a row. They're the same shape, same height. You know, they might turn out that way initially from the bulk move, but that's where the skill comes in, is making them look natural and making them such that the hole becomes, hey, how many ways can we play this hole?
So when the book is finally written on Clive Clark, what chapter will be most meaningful to you? Your playing career, your broadcasting career, or your golf course design career?
That's a great question. I'm really not pompous enough to think they'll write a book about me. But I do remember we had a famous comedian in Great Britain called Eric Sykes. And all he had written on his tombstone was, in capital letters, "I told you I was ill."
But seriously, what would be on your tombstone?
Great question. I haven't really thought that one through. I would like something like, he was a really good guy, he got on with people, and he always did his best. Sean Connery said, he did his best.
I love it. We have to end with that. Clive Clark, what a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks so much for hosting me here at The Hideaway. And I can't wait to discover Dumbarney Links. Really looking forward to playing it someday.
Well, you'll be made very welcome, and I hope you'll enjoy it. I think you will.
Thanks so much.
Pleasure.
Golf Interview with Anne Liguori is brought to you by Tourism Ireland. Ireland is open and ready to welcome you back. World-class courses, celebrated links, spectacular scenery, rich culture, and the warmest of welcomes await. Now is the time to get back to the things that matter most. Now is the time for Ireland. Press the green button and start planning at ireland.com/golf. And by iBeCool Athleisure Wear for men and women. Technology meets fashion with iBeCool, stylish UPF 50 plus sun protection, and IceFill technology to cool your body temperature on hot and humid days. Look great and protect your skin. iBKUL.com.